Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, April 26th, 2009. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or email us anytime, comments at libertytalkradio.com. If you're listening to rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to area code 918-919-0101. I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You could also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. Folks, this evening we are going to have a broadcast that's slightly different than our usual broadcast. We will have Mr. Bob Heff. He is the designer of the 50-star flag. He did so when he was a student back in 1958. He only received a grade of B, and he is a very, very driven, goal-oriented person. I've learned that about him after watching his videos. But 2 years later, after the flag was accepted as the official flag of the United States, he finally got his A. That takes a drive for a young fella, and you got to give him a lot of credit for that. But I wasn't going to have him on the program, but then I listened to his speech, and it is not only interesting. It is absolutely captivating, and I just can't wait to get him on the air. I asked him to call in a little later so I can give this little blurb without him holding on the phone, and I think this is him right now. Let's get him on the air. Mr. Heft. Hello? Mr. Heff.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, okay. We got you. I thought I lost you for a moment. Good evening.
How are you tonight?
I'm just fine. Thank you very much. In the interest of full disclosure, my wife is going to, she's in the studio with me this evening. She wanted to hear you firsthand, and so she's on the other microphone. And so it's my wife, Erin, and I sitting here. We are so pleased to have you on our program. There's one thing I will ask. Do you mind? I will try not to interrupt you because your story is absolutely captivating, and I want our audience to really hear the whole thing without me interrupting. But we may receive calls during your presentation, and at that time I will try to interrupt you, if you will, at an appropriate time so we can take callers. Is that okay with you?
That's fine, yep.
Okay, I just gave you a brief, a very brief introduction as to who you were and why I had you on the air. And I'd like to maybe just pass the microphone to you and for you to do what you do best, to tell your story and give us a little background and then tell us your story, which I found absolutely captivating.
All right, I'd be glad to do that. And like I say, feel free to interrupt me at any time. I was a 17-year-old high school junior in Lancaster, Ohio, and that's a city down about 30 miles south of Columbus, Ohio. I was born in Saginaw, Michigan, but my father was in the service, and I was raised with my grandparents on my dad's side. Now, I will be referring to them as Mom and Dad because I lived with them since I was 2 months old, so I just wanted to set that clear, that they really are my grandparents, but I call them mom and dad.
Okay.
Well, I used to be a real, real shy, quiet kid. I got pretty good grades in history and government. I'd always sit in the back of the class, and I would never volunteer for anything. I was good at projects, but I absolutely couldn't get up and speak in front of a class. And in 1958, I got to mention some things. I've always been interested in government and politics. And, of course, I was later in government. But anyhow, at that particular time, Eisenhower was president. And of course, we just studied him in my junior year. He was a general in a European theater, and I knew quite a lot about that. But now here he is in 1950. He was president of the United States. And at that particular time, and, of course, to mention the political affiliation for some of those that maybe not follow the history quite so well, he was a Republican, and also the United States Senate was Republican at that time. Now, the reason I mention that is the United States Senate is the body that has to ratify states. And if they don't ratify it, if they would not be for that, then it wouldn't go any further. Once the Senate ratifies a state, then it goes to the existing states at that time, and they have a two-year window that they have to ratify it or not ratify it.
Right.
And if any time during that, if the Senate would reject it or the people in the territory would reject it to begin with, it wouldn't have got to the Senate. But anyhow, all three of those steps have to happen before we grant statehood. Now, statehood can be granted after ratification any day, any date. The only thing is we only add the star to the flag on the July 4th following the date of admission.
I see.
And that plays into why we had a 49 and a 50-star flag. Well, in high school, and my teacher's name was Stanley Pratt. He had been a teacher for 50 years at that point. He was from the old school, an excellent teacher. And anyhow, we all had to do, now we could pick what kind of project we wanted to do. And I played a hunch that at that time, with the Republican Senate and everything, why would they want to take in Alaska and stop there? Because at that time, Alaska was heavily Democratic.
Right.
And I played a hunch. I thought, well, I'll bet you that if they, in the smoke-filled rooms of the United States Senate, as we read, I thought, well, if they admit Alaska for political balance, if no other reason, they might be thinking down the road to take in two states. Well, at that time, Hawaii was very Republican. In other words, offset Alaska. Now, of course, they've reversed roles now.
Right.
But anyhow, I played a hunch while the professional flag makers thought, how would I design a 49-star flag? And boy, that was too difficult for me. I'd do something silly like seven rows of seven, which, of course, is exactly what they did.
Right.
But I thought further ahead, and I thought, well, I'm going to make, for my project for American history class, a 50-star flag. Now, this was 2 years before anybody else made a 50-star flag, and it's even about a month or about a year and a half earlier than any 49-star flag. In other words, it's out of sequence. So my parents had a flag. They'd been married about 27 years at that point. And for one of their wedding presents, they received a 48-star flag. And it had a lot of sentimental value to them. Well, since they were my grandparents, they were up in years, every Flag Day, Veterans Day, Memorial Day, it was my responsibility to take a step stool and go out on our front porch. We had some hooks up there, and I would put the flag up. So it gave me sort of a sense of doing my part for showing patriotism by putting up the flag on the holidays. Well, anyhow, I thought, well, if I were to make a 50-star flag, where would I start? Now, I had to be concerned about the blue field. I didn't have to worry about the stripes because that would always remain the same as the 13 red and white stripes. So without asking my mom and dad, I decided to take that 48-star flag and sit down and take a pair of scissors and a seam ripper and cut the threads where the blue field met the red and white stripes. And I did this without asking or running by mom or dad, and that was a major mistake.
Well, you knew it was a mistake at the time, did you not? Or was it just a careless overlook on your part?
Well, I didn't consider the fact of how upset they would be. As a matter of fact, I really didn't know at that time it was a wedding present either.
Oh.
So I'm sitting down. I just thought it was a flag they got,
Okay.
And then they informed me very vividly. They reminded me later that was a wedding present. But I'm sitting on the living room floor, and I cut the thread. So in my left hand, I had the blue field with 48 stars on it. And in the right hand, I had the red and white stripes. And my mother walked in, and she looked and saw me, and I was in Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, and You know, I was very patriotic at that time. That's just the way I was brought up. And she looked at me cutting up the flag, and it wouldn't be safe to say what she said, but she was very upset. and I heard her mumbling to herself as she went out into the kitchen, like, "Wait till your dad gets home." Now, my dad was a mold maker at Anchor Hawking Glass Company in Lancaster, and he always came in the back door because he worked at the foundry, and she made him come in to take his shoes off. And I could hear her out in the kitchen say, "You ought to go into the front room and see what your son is doing." He said, "Well, what's he doing?" So anyhow, he came in, and I looked up, and I said, "Hi, Dad, how are you?" And there I'm sitting with a flag in two different pieces, and he was livid, you know. And as he walked out in the kitchen, I could hear him saying, "Where did we go wrong with this kid? You know, he's been a scout, his dad was in the service, and here he is cutting up the flag." So my mom had an old foot-operated Singer sewing machine.
My mother had one also.
Now, and I still have that machine, matter of fact. My mom was going to sell it at a rummage sale years later, and I went down home and visited because I'd moved a couple hundred miles away, and I looked in the garage, and there's this sewing machine. I said, "What's that sitting out there for?" She said, "Well, I got a new one," and said she had a price on it, $25.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I had to buy that from my
own mother. Goodness, $25. They were wonderful pieces of machinery. Wonderful.
And I don't use it anymore or anything like that. It's in storage. But someday it might be in a museum or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
And I would, on a rainy day, if I couldn't go out and play, I would go downstairs, I'd pull up a chair, and I'd watch my mother sew. Now, she wasn't a professional, but she made her own aprons and dresses and pillowcases and took in sewing for the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And she would, and if you get that treadle going, and if you don't synchronize that with the bobbin and stuff, like if you shuttle the fabric through there too slow or too poor,
right.
it jams up.
Right.
But Mom always had some magic words, if you know what I mean, to make it go again. And I always got the biggest kick out of that, you know. So anyhow, this flag I didn't have. All I had was a yardstick and a pair of proportional dividers. Now, the actual making this flag, I went down to the store and I bought some blue cotton broadcloth, and then I got some what they call Bondex, and it's still available. And it's a fabric they use in arts and crafts. It has a glue on the back of it, heat activated. Take a hot iron and you can press it on. It's like a baseball jersey and stuff for kids. They can put their name or number on there. So anyhow, I thought if I got enough of that material and cut out 100 stars, 50 for either side, and I took the yardstick and I took a piece of chalk and I put a dot for the tip of each star, and I just barely touched it with the iron, so if I needed to reposition the stars, I could do that. And once I got them all nice and even, I pressed on one side, I flipped the flag over because you could see through the fabric, and I matched up on the other side.
Right.
So then I had the blue field and the 50 stars. So then I had to figure out how, since I'd the interesting part, and this is in a couple of books, I had never actually sewn before making the flag of our country. I'd watched my mother run the Singer, but I never did. But anyhow, and the more interesting part, I have never sewn since making the flag of our country. it's a one-shot deal. So since I didn't know how to tack it or baste it, putting it together, I laid it down on our dining, we had a big round dining room table. And I placed the flag down on that, and I scotch taped the back together. And then I had to come up, I had to figure out who could I get to sew this flag on the sewing machine. And I racked my brain, it must have been at least for, two or three seconds. And I thought, my mom is a great seamstress. She'd be glad to do it. So I went out into the kitchen, and here's where public relations come in. I do public relations for Bronner's Christmas store in Frankenmuth, Michigan. It's the largest Christmas store in the world, and I do signings over there on Flag Day and 4th of July.
I see.
But anyhow, I went out into the kitchen. I said, "Mom, you got to be the greatest mother in the whole world." I said, you're a good seamstress, you know. You keep a beautiful house. You're a great cook. You make the bed and all this. And she says, "What do you want?" I said, "If you could just tear yourself away from the chores you do so very well and go downstairs and sew my flag, it'd take 5 or 10 minutes." And she said, "I don't want anything to do with that." I mean, she was still very upset. So, being 17, you know everything. I said, "All right, I'll go down and do it myself." So I actually sewed the flag. And just looking forward a little bit later on, I was on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and they showed the back of that when I got home from New York. He said, "You gotta let me re-sew that flag." They showed the backside, and it looked very amateurish. I said, "Mom, when I needed your help, you didn't want to help me with your mid-problems." I never let my mom redo the flag. It's today like it was.
It was okay.
So then I had to go to, now this was a two-part grade in school. One part of the grade, half the grade, was on the project, whatever you did, and I was the only one that made a flag. And then the other 50% of the grade, you had to stand up verbally and give a 3 to 5 minute dissertation on about how you did it and why and so forth.
Yeah.
That's the part that scared me. So I started off to school, and a friend of mine, I caught the school bus, ran to the back of the bus, and a friend of mine, his name was Jim, and I never mentioned his last name because he's still living. I haven't seen him in 40 years. I want to go back and see him sometime. He lives in Mansfield, Ohio. But anyhow, I ran back and said, "Jim, have you got your project done? We have to have him on the teacher's desk the first thing this morning." He says, "Don't bother me. I'm working on it now." Now, what Jim did is what he did for his project. It took about 5 minutes on the bus. He picked up 5 leaves off the ground, had a roll of scotch tape and some notebook paper, and he's taping these leaves down. And he's identifying elm, hickory, maple. And I thought, wow, you know, talk about, I remember doing that like the first or second grade out here when I was a junior in high school. So I didn't want to, we were the best of buddies, so I sort of chuckled. I'm thinking if he gets a D minus on this, he might be lucky. So we got to school, and I placed my flag on the teacher's desk, and all the students threw their projects on top. And, well, that's, you're never supposed to place anything on top of the flag. I knew that then, and I've been preaching that for 50 years now. But anyhow, I thought, well, these are my fellow students, so don't rock the boat. So Jim got up. I can still vividly see him standing in front of the class, pointing to his leaf. He said, "Now, this leaf here comes from a tree. If you come off my front porch down 3 steps over the white fence, about 15 foot in, this tree has a circumference of 12 foot, a height of about 10 foot. He did everything but tell how many leaves are on it." And all the classmates are like, "Oh, brother," and they were laughing. I'm ducking under my desk because I was embarrassed. Everybody knew Jim and I were buddies. And the teacher gave him the grade of an A. And I said, "You've got to be kidding me." Hey, that's my buddy Jim up. And all the kids are saying, "You've got to be kidding." Well, anyhow, I was the last one there because I didn't want to volunteer to get up in front of the class. That's what I was afraid of. And I kept looking at the clock on the wall, and we had 8 minutes to go. And I got to tell you, my parents were from Germany. My whole family's German. And anyhow, they were very strict disciplinarians. And I never talked back to a teacher in my life. I respected anybody in uniform, be it military or law enforcement. And I really respected my parents from my grandparents. Because it got rather painful if I didn't, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And having retired from teaching 32 years, let me just make an offhand comment. That's what I think is one of the things wrong in our educational system today. The teacher should be running the classroom, not the students.
Correct. I agree. Yeah. Oh, excuse me, Bob, let me just interrupt you just for a moment for station identification.
Sure.
Folks, you're listening to Bob Heft. There's a delightful story about how it came about that he designed the 50-star flag. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. Feel free to call in with any questions that you might have. I know he's telling a captivating story. You may not want to interrupt him, but, you know, feel free to do so. Okay? All right. Thank you, Bob. Go ahead. Continue. Thank you.
All righty. And so I'm sitting back there, and I looked at the clock on the wall, and I had 8 minutes to go. And Mr. Pratt, he looked at the flag there, and he's counting the stars. He said, "What's this thing on my desk?" It really upset me using that phrase, "What's this thing?"
Yeah.
I got up, and I started walking up toward the desk, and my legs are like Hershey bars. I mean, I could hardly walk. And it's the first time I ever confronted him. I said, "What did you say?" He said, "What's this thing on my desk?" So I started lecturing. I said, "Well, first of all, it's a flag of a country. You don't refer to it as that thing." And he's counting the stars. He said, "I can't believe it." He said, "You're one of the best students I've ever had in American history." He said, "But you don't even know how many states we have." I said, "I know there's 48 states. I can name the capital, the approximate population, any river goes through it, or what the town's known for or state." And he said, "Well, why you got so many?" So I thought, boy, I'm going to impress him. I said, "Well, you know, they're talking about taking Alaska." And he said, "I read that in the paper." And I said, well, if they take that, I went through the political balance scenario.
Right.
And the reason I thought that in 58 and 59, that the election with Kennedy and Nixon was coming up, and matter of fact, that was going to, everybody predict that's going to be a barn burner. Of course, it was the closest election in history until the two before the last one. And so anyhow, I played a hunch that we'd taken the two states. And he said, well, I've heard about Alaska. I said, well, you know, I think they're going to take in two states, and it's probably going to be Hawaii. And anyhow, he didn't buy that story. And he said, well, he gave me the grade. He gave me the grade on that of a B minus. Jim spent 5 minutes and got an A. I worked about 12 and a half hours Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to get a B minus. And I looked at him. I said, you've got to be kidding. He says, young man, one thing you need to remember, I'm the teacher, you're the student. Now, here comes the challenge that literally changed my life. He said, if you don't like the grade, get it accepted in Washington, come back and say, man, I might consider changing the grade. So I went home that night, I had the flag in a plastic bag, and I was really miffed. And I threw it on the sofa, and my mother came in, she says, supper's ready. I said, I'm not eating. And she said, well, why not? I said, I'm very upset. I said, and I never talked about a teacher. I said, the stupid teacher gave me a B minus on the flag. I thought maybe I'd get some sympathy from my mom. She said, that's more than I would have given you. That just made me that much angrier. So anyhow, I thought, where do I go from here? So I waited a couple of weeks, and I sat down. I wrote a letter to the governor of the state of Ohio. His name was Mike DeSound. He used to be mayor of Toledo, Ohio. And I wrote a letter, and I explained in there why I made it anticipation, taking in two states and so forth. And I said, I took photographs of the back of the flag, and I had the governor date stamp the back of those. There's one in the Ohio Historical Museum in Columbus. I have the other three. So I could prove that on April the 18th, 1958, my flag was in existence.
Okay.
That's the documentation I have.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, that was rad. I got a letter back from the governor that says you're to be commended for your interest in history and government. However, we only have 48 states. I'd mentioned that three or four times. He just read right through that.
Oh, I see.
But I thought, well, that was rather dumb to do. So I had never talked to anybody important, any mayor, councilman, county commissioner, anything like that. And I found out my congressman lived in my hometown. So I wrote about a 3 or 4 page letter, put the flag in a box, rode my bicycle clear across town, and I got there about 5:30, right around supper time, and I knocked on the door, and they had like a Cape Cod type house. And the congressman's name was Walter H. Moeller, and he used to be the congressman from the 10th Congressional District of Ohio. Now, that's been renumbered since then. But anyhow, his wife answered the door, and she said, what can I do for you, sonny? I said, is Mr. Congressman home? She said, yes, he's eating supper. So anyhow, he came to the door, and he said, what can I do for you, sonny? And he's a retired Lutheran minister, matter of fact, after he retired, he moved to California, and he was an associate pastor out there with Reverend Schuller at Crystal Cathedral out there.
Okay.
And, he since died a couple of years ago. But anyhow, at that time, I said, I have in this box a 50-star flag. And right away, he interrupted me and said, no, you don't. That's what sort of set me back. And I said, on the second attempt, I said, in this box, I have a 50-star flag. He said, you can't have, they don't make them. I said, well, in this box, I have a project that I made in anticipation taken in two states, and it's a 50-star flag. I'd like for you to take it to Washington if they ever have a contest or channel to the right people. And he said, well, he says, I've heard in Washington they might be considering Alaska. Well, that impressed me that he was up to speed at that far. But he didn't buy my story about the political balance.
Yeah.
So I said, just take it there. So this went on through my junior year. I went through my senior year, and I graduated June the 1st, 1960. And I wanted to be an architect at one time, and I still do artist renderings. But anyhow, I became a draftsman of the major company in town. They had 843 employees there, 40 in the drafting department. That was going to be my career. And I'd worked there. This was on June the 11th, right before Flag Day. And I got a call from a congressman in Washington. And we weren't supposed to get personal calls. This is a big company. They didn't like personal calls
right
at that time. And so anyhow, the secretary comes out and she says, Mr. Heft, you have a personal call in my office. And I can tell she's upset. And I said, well, who is it? I was thinking it was Bomb, because before that, I was a carryout boy in a grocery store in high school. and she'd call right near quitting time to bring home a loaf of bread or
right,
a quart of milk.
Yeah.
I told her, don't ever call. And she said, it's some congressman. So I assumed it was my congressman, but it wasn't. Because what President Eisenhower did, he appointed five U.S. congressmen to act as like a screening house for the U.S. Flag Selection Commission. It's a presidential proclamation. So he narrowed it down from all the flags and selected the flag. And this congressman said, now this call came in about 11:15. He says, Mr. Heft, he said, I just wanted to alert you. I know you're about 17 or 18, but the President of the United States is probably going to be calling you later today to inform you he selected your flag as the flag of our country. Don't let on like you know anything about it. And I didn't know what to do. So, and the reason I remember that time so well, right across the street from where I work, was a major, a nice restaurant, Smitty's Home Cooked Meals. And that day they had meatballs and spaghetti. So the choice I had to make, and I do a lot of schools and a lot of commencements, I always tell kids, you know, if you're going to be faced with making choices and decisions in life, the thing is try to make the right decision,
right.
The right choice.
Right.
Well,
right.
I had to choose between going over and getting his meatballs and spaghetti or waiting near the phone for the call for the President of the United States. So when I got back from lunch, I'd made my choice. I walked in, and I said to Mrs. Smith, I said, Miss, and now that I reflect back on this as a kid, you know, I said, Mrs. Smith, did I happen to get a call from the White House while I was out to lunch? And she looked at me, they're like, and I know what was going through her mind. Boy, have we been ironing screwballs here. And he says, no, we didn't get a call from the White House, but be assured if we do, I'll let you know. But every time the phone would ring, then I thought, oh, my Lord, what am I going to say? Because, I mean, I didn't talk to anybody in of any stature. And since that time, I've been to the White House 14 times, met 9 presidents.
Wow.
Flown on Air Force One. I've been to Vietnam with the Bob Hope Show. Matter of fact, I've done 47 shows with Bob Hope.
Oh, you did? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And 2 years ago, I was a Grand Marshal out in Palm Springs, California, for Veterans Day, the largest Veterans Day celebration in America, and they have a huge parade out there. And anyhow, I went up and I got to see and go in Bob Hope's house right up the top of the hill there.
So wow.
That was sort of like full circle for me.
Oh, he was one of my favorite comedians, you know. I grew up with him.
There will never be another Bob Hope.
I agree.
A lot of people try to be, but he was a fantastic. And Dolores Hope still lives, she lives in Toluca Lake and stuff. She's still pretty good from what I understand.
Great.
But anyhow, at that particular time, the phone rang about 3:30, and the secretary came out. She's very pale, and she looks around. She says, "Mr. Heft, you're wanted on the phone again." And I'm thinking, "Oh, this is going to be a habit forming." I said, "Who is it this time?" And she, real pale, she said, "It's the White House." I go by the name of Bob Heft. I never used Robert. Matter of fact, I was mayor of the city of Napoleon, Ohio for 7 terms, and on the door it said Mayor Bob Heft. Where I taught at Northwest State Community College in Archibald, it said Professor Bob Heft. So that's how I go. Matter of fact, I have a van, which is the entire van is American flag, and my mission license plate is U.S. flag, and that's on the van.
Great.
But anyhow, at that particular time, the president called, or actually the call came in, and my boss said, "Watch what you say." And I started to pick up the phone, and here's these 40 draftsmen standing around in this small office going to listen to my private conversation.
Yeah.
And that made me even more nervous.
Yeah.
And then as I'm picking up the handset, he said, "Also, we're putting on the PBX switchboard, the entire 800 people will be listening in on my conversation." And anyhow, I picked up and I'm shaking like a leaf, and I was, hello? And it was a lady. And I thought, hey, well, this is going to be a little bit easier. I thought maybe the secretary. And she said, "Is this Robert G. Heft?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." And I really felt, you know, relieved. She says, "One moment. The president would like to speak with you." And President Eisenhower came on. And I didn't know the proper salutation or anything at that particular time. But anyhow, he came on the phone, and he said, "Is this Robert G. Heft?" And I said, "Yes, sir, but you can just call me Bob." Now, here's all these adults around. Here's this kid that's been working for 8 days, you know, call me Bob. And he was real dramatic about this. He said, "Do you remember a couple years ago sending a 50-star flag to Washington?" He reiterated 50. And, I had sent like 18 letters, made 21 phone calls to the White House, never heard from him. So I paused and, yeah, I said, I do sort of recall that. And he said, I was wanting to know the possibility of you coming to Washington, D.C., around the 1st of July, spending several days at the White House to be here for the official adoption on July 4th. And I said, well, wait a minute, I'll have to ask my boss. So I put the President of the United States on hold. And all these adults, they looked around and said, what is this kid doing? And I said, well, he wants me to come to Washington for 3 or 4 days, to take a day to go over, a day to come back, it's a whole week. He said, tell him you'll be there. I said, well, I don't have any sick leave, I don't have any vacation time. You know, I didn't want to lose my first real job. And they said, well, charge it off to executive leave or something, but get him back on the phone. They were really upset. Yeah. I didn't know why they were so upset until I found out later on this company I worked for did about $31 million annually with the Defense Department.
Oh,
they sort of messed up their relationship. So I reached down and picked up the phone, and I said, Dwight, are you still there? And here are all these adults, and here's this kid talking to the president, Dwight, and President Eisenhower's answering, yes, Bob, I'm still there. So they turned me over to the secretary. They wanted my Social Security number and the photograph and my car and everything like that. So I sent that to them, and on July the 1st, I went to Washington, D.C., and I often said that, it's sort of, I use this in my speeches I give, and I give a couple hundred speeches a year. I said, it's funny, but I stayed at the White House before I ever stayed in a Holiday Inn. and so I was there for 4 days. On July the 4th, 1960, my flag, I was on stage with about 100,000 people. They had the President of the United States on my left, my congressman on the right. They had all the bands, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, playing patriotic music. And I'm still that shy kid sitting up there on stage with the President of the United States. I'm looking out of the audience looking for somebody that I can identify with, maybe Jim that made the leaves or something. And my congressman looked at me and says, you shouldn't sit with your back to the president. You should talk to him. So anyhow, slowly I turned to him. I thought, don't act like a kid. Act like I'm a young man with intelligent type questions.
Yeah.
So I looked him straight in the eyes. I said, well, how do you like your job? and he said, it's been very challenging. So pretty soon I'm looking out in the audience again, and my congressman said, you appear to have something on your mind. And the only person I could think of was my teacher, and the words he said, get it accepted in Washington,
right.
Consider changing the grade.
Right.
So the president, they had a color guard there. They raised my flag. It was the very first 50-star flag in America ever to be raised over the Capitol building. And so anyhow, he said, would you like to say a few words? And I stood up, and I was just about ready to pass out. And I looked up at the flag, and little did I know then, but I said, I hope this flag serves our great and grateful nation for many years.
Oh, that was a nice thing to say. That was clever.
I never use notes that come off the top of my head, and that's the way it come out.
That's wonderful.
And so they give me the flag back, and I headed back to Lancaster. It's about 600 miles. And, of course, we didn't have cell phones or anything like that. Now I have cell phones and a satellite phone.
Yeah.
So I called my mom. I said, Mom, go to bed, leave the key out. It's going to be 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning before I get home. So I got home, and there were some TV, like great big moving vans there. The next morning, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and they wanted a pool-type interview. I got 2 hours sleep from 4:30 till 6:30. And I'd been up for 32 straight hours, so you can imagine how I felt.
Yeah.
And anyhow, I did a pool-type interview, and I said, I've got to go cross town to the high school to get a grade change. I was obsessed with that. So they took all these cameras, and there were newspapers, the American Legion magazine out of Indianapolis, local radio stations, and Mr. Pratt was sitting in working on lesson plans, seating charts, and they're setting up his camera, like 40 people in his room. And he said, what's coming off? And he said, well, Bob Heff's coming back to talk to you about his grade. And he was a little miffed. He said, yeah, I saw him last night on TV from Washington. He said, he won't be back for days. He didn't realize I drove all night. So I walked in there, and he was looking at me. He would not look at me eye to eye, and that upset me. I said, hi, Mr. Pratt, how are you? And he's not bad. I said, do you remember a couple of years ago in American history class, when I made an American flag, he said, oh, he said, I can't remember all the projects.
He remembered, didn't he?
he remembered. And he, He said, well, I vaguely remember. I said, do you remember the grade you gave me on that? He said, oh, I can't remember. I said, it was a B-. And he said, that sounds about right. So I had this letter signed by this gentleman named Dwight David Eisenhower. I had to give him a topic. I didn't want him to tear. I stuck it under his nose. I said, do you want to be the only teacher in America's history to put a B- on our nation's national flag? And so I have the grade book encased in plastic. I never display it. And it's, we didn't have felt tips, and we had a red ballpoint pen. He said, if it's good enough for Washington, it's good enough for me. I hereby change the grade to an A. So a little bit of persistence there did pay off. When I do schools and stuff, I tell kids, you know, my philosophy is, and I try to inspire young, I speak from first grade to fourth grade, and I break it down to middle school and to high school and colleges. I do a lot of conventions and things like that. I do a lot of traveling, about 130,000 miles a year. I was just down in Huntsville, Alabama, which is a very neat place down there for the Woodmen of the World for their state convention. And it's now next July 4th, 2010, I'm going to be out in Doris, California. And that's a city of about 890 people right on the Oregon-California border. They wanted me this year, and I'm going to be in Brookings, South Dakota this July 4th, so I couldn't do that. But on 2010, my flag becomes 50 years old on July the 4th.
Wow, unbelievable. That's what is the most common question that you receive from your audiences around the world?
Well, one of the things, especially at schools, kids, and these are young kids, and stuff. I've had high school kids, they said, well, Mr. Hefta, where would you put a star if we ever adopted Russia? I said, well, first of all, that'll never happen. So, but anyhow, I designed a 51-star flag also. I thought, you know, what would happen to Puerto Rico or something like that?
That's right, yeah. Yeah,
I've got a 51-star flag. I designed that about 50 years ago also, so. You know, let them bring them on unprepared.
Okay, very good. Well, you know, could you tell us your experience going to Vietnam and performing or with Bob Hope, and I guess with his performance? Can you tell us a little bit about that, a little bit about Bob Hope, a little bit about, you know, what type of presentation you made and what kind of response you received? I mean, tell us, because I remember that era all too well. And, you know, so I'm just curious to see, you know, what your experience was with that.
Well, I never used notes or anything like that. And, of course, Bob Hope had writers, but he a lot of his stuff was spontaneous. And I remember one thing when General Westmoreland was there, and we of course, went from base to base there, so from Saigon all around. And I was a civilian, and I don't know a whole lot about artillery or anything like that. And we're down, and there was, 50,000 troops probably in this one location. And you could see the white puff of the howitzers off in the distance.
Yeah.
And I'm up there, and I do like a warm-up act for Bob Hope before he comes on stage. And, of course, they had the gold diggers there and Miss Universe and stuff like that. And General Westmoreland was there, and he didn't know what I was going to say. I really didn't either. And I looked, and I could see that puff of smoke. And so I turned to the general. I said, General, I said, could I ask you a question? He looked at me. Yeah, I guess so. I said, that white puff over there from the enemy, how far is that away? He says, well, that's probably about 20 miles. And I said, could I ask you one more question? He says, what's that? I said, what's the range? He says, about 10 miles. So I said, oh, well, I don't have to worry then, and stuff like that. But Bob Hope came out, and we'd chit-chat in front of the troops. Of course, we'd talk about patriotism and about the military and so forth. We didn't get into controversial things. But Bob Hope would say something, and I'd come back, and he looked at me. He said, you know, it's the first time I've ever played a straight man to a comedian, and we just hit it off and stuff like that. And I'm sort of witty, and sometimes I don't choose my words. I just have fun doing it.
Yeah.
And he really liked that.
That's great.
But
I'm sorry, again. I'm sorry. I walked all over your words. I'm sorry. Please continue.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, what did you say to the troops? Did you give the presentation that you're giving, you gave us this evening, or did you just do something different?
Well, it sort of developed. I thanked them, first of all, for serving our country, and I talked about the flag. It wasn't quite the same as this day, but I said, you know, some people, the Viet Cong or whoever, they look at that as a piece of cloth. I said, but that flag on the pole, and I'd point to it, I said, that's not just a piece of cloth, that's the very fabric of America.
Right.
And I talked like that, and I heaped a lot of praise on him. I said, you know, and I feel very strongly about this then, and as I do now, if the politicians would let the military and the professionals run it, we would have won Vietnam. But yeah. They knew the military, and the same thing now. You have a lot of people that have no experience talking to the military, and I feel very strongly that when the military has this job to do, let them do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I told the troops. They went over pretty good with them, because a lot of them, of course, we had to draft them. A lot of them were there not voluntarily, but I lumped them all together, and it went over quite well. I got a standing ovation, and of course, Bob Hope always gets standing ovations.
I think, Bob, my wife has a question for you. Hold on, please.
All righty.
Hi, Bob. My name is Erin. I wanted to ask, how did you, or did you, mathematically calculate the position of the stars in order to make it come out right on the two flags or the three flags that you did design?
Well, of course, now we have computers and stuff. Then we did, I was looking at the 48-star flag. And I thought, how would I do that? I could have 5 rows of 10 or 10 rows of 5, but that would change the proportions of the blue field. So I started adding up alternating numbers. If you look at the flag of our country today, it has 6, and now when I had it, they had 6 rows of 8. That was a 48. I anticipated the 49 would be 7 rows of 7, which is what it was. But I thought, wow, 50, how'd I do that? So I put 6 in the first row, and then I put 5 in the next row, and I shifted 1/2 space over. So if you look at the flag today, it has 5 rows of 6, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5 alternating, and the 5 rows of 6 makes 30, then the 4 rows of 5 in between that make the 20, which adds up to 50. Well, let me just say also the 51-star flag, which I've not displayed too many places, it's sort of under wraps, but to tell you what it looked like, because that's even harder to figure out 51-star, keep in mind I had a 48-star flag in front of me, 6 rows of 8, and I looked at it, and I'm sort of a visionary. Like, I said, if I put a star, add a star to the first row, the third row, and the fifth row, then I would have 9, 8, 9, 8, 9, 8. 3 9s are 27, 3 8s are 24, 51. So I had to do it mathematically because I didn't have computers then. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Fascinating. Congratulations.
You know,
I have to
confess. And this doesn't speak very well of me, but when I first heard your story, and every time I hear it, I still am captivated by it, and I laugh with the comments that you make. I just find it so interesting.
I have fun with it myself.
Oh, and that's I can tell you're having fun with it. You and I are about the same age, and yet when I went to school, I was such a goofball. I mean, I was like, in fact, I wouldn't even qualify to be your friend Jim, who made the, my friend Joe, in fact, Joe Sinigli, I'll even use his last name, he would have done that, and he would have gotten the A. I had friends that, they went through school, never cracked a book, they knew how to scam the system, and they always did well. I always had a struggle, and I never did well. But I think of myself saying, well, geez, if I got a B minus on a project like that, if I would have thought myself to be so ambitious, which I would not have been that ambitious at the time. I got ambitious late in life. But and a teacher gave me a B minus, I'll be honest with you, Bob, I would have been ecstatic. I mean, anything around a B, I mean, my parents were happy. They just didn't want to see me get thrown out of school. So I admire what you did so much.
I've often thought about this. If the teacher, now I didn't set out to design the flag of country, I just want to get a grade for that 6-week grading period. I've often thought, and I've been asked this many times, I ask kids what should have graded and gotten, all the kids say, well, A. If the teacher would have given me an A, I probably would have never pursued it, because that's what I set out to do, get a good grade for that grading period. But by him giving me that B minus and throwing that challenge down, now I taught for 32 years, and believe it or not, I never told a student what to do. I would challenge them to do it. And I think we're all like that. If somebody gives us a direct order, you got to do this, you rear back on your heels. But if they say, well, I bet you can't do that, then it becomes, oh, sit back, hang on, because I'm going to show you. And I feel that Mr. Pratt done me a big favor by giving me that B minus.
But things are so different today. It almost seems, and I'm going to exaggerate, and I know this doesn't occur very often, but today you would think if you gave a student a B minus on a project like that, you'd get a letter from an attorney.
That's probably true. Yep.
And that's to the detriment of the student, isn't it?
And it's the same thing. Like I say, I feel pretty strongly. We have a real problem in this country, educational system, and we have some real bright kids and stuff. But we have I'm in the Lions Club, and we have exchange students. I know the Rotary does and stuff like that. And when we get students from overseas come here, they're generally a couple years ahead of our students here.
Right.
And I think that's a shame. I mean, we like to think we our education system's the best, but we're far down on the list as far as learning curve with students, and we need to do something about that.
I know this is a little bit off the subject, but do you have an opinion as to how we can square away? Oh, we do have a caller. Hold on, please.
All righty.
Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please, and where you're calling from.
Maureen.
Hello.
All right.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, they hung up.
Oh, did they? All right.
Hey, geez, they just hung up on us. Well, that's a shame. It was your area code, 989.
All righty.
Yeah, I wish maybe they'll call back, Bob.
Well, that's all true.
But what do you think the... generally, I mean, not specifically, generally, what do we need to truly address to start changing this around, other than the raising of the children, obviously, is very important, and this is a critical. Like you mentioned, you came from German ancestry, and your parents were disciplinarians. They were strict in what they did.
Right.
And I understand that. I mean, my parents were from the other side, and the whole same thing, you know. Only I wasn't as accomplished as you. I failed them in so many ways, but I finally worked out of it. But it seems like today we don't see or hear that, you know. It's like, you know, you go to school. The school is a place where you get rid of the kids so you don't have to – take care of them yourself.
It begins at home, first of all. I have a little 9-year-old great nephew and a little 5-year-old great niece and a 2-year-old little great nephew, and they're the love of my life, and I've set up an educational trust for them.
Yeah.
But, I would sit down and read to them, and my one little nephew, his name was Edward Heft, and I call him EJ, and I would read to him, and he's in the fourth grade now and reading probably a sixth grade level or something like that. And he reads his little brother and sister. But it begins at home. I've had people tell me, well, the schools are failing because they're not doing this and that. But yet I said, well, what do you do at home? They said, well, that's not our job. That's the educator's job. Well, excuse me.
No, they did,
in the discipline. And we've taken away, you mentioned about lawyers and stuff like that. I got a spanking in the sixth grade. My biggest fear was going home. My parents find out they did twice as bad. So, we need to turn that around somehow.
Right. Well, the education is the responsibility of the parents. We just happen to have a public school system. But still, the responsibility for educating children rests with the parents. And we should never think that the state is responsible for educating kids. They may provide a school room with a teacher to assist.
Right.
And I think this is where we go awry. And unless we start thinking that way, I don't think it'll ever change. I have so many friends who work in the school system or are teachers, and their stories are always the same, and they're never very good.
It's sad. I get into, like, say, a couple hundred schools a year, and I go in there to give it an assembly. So I don't tell the administration, I don't pass judgment. But when I leave and I see what's going on there, I feel bad. Now, let me just tell you, I spoke in Traverse City, Michigan a couple years ago. We've had 27 changes in Old Glory from the 13 to the current. And so I'm up there in front of first, second, third, and fourth graders, and I really like that audience because if you ask a question, you're like a sponge. You know, I said, well, why do you think Betsy Ross put the stars in a circle and so forth? Every hand goes up. Well, when they introduced me, they said the designer of America's flag. And this one teacher sitting on stage said, well, he didn't do that. Betsy Ross did that. So I said, and I ask these kids, every time we take a new state, what do we have to do? We have to add a star. And she come up to me later on. She said, you know, she said, I really enjoyed your speech. I learned a lot of things about the flag I didn't know. And I'm thinking, you sure did. And then she asked me, and she'd been a teacher for 22 years, by the way. She says, well, do you know Betsy Ross? I said, we email each other all the time. That's what's teaching our kids. Now, there are a lot of good teachers, but there's some that probably should have had another profession.
Yeah. Bob, we have a caller. Hopefully this one will stick. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My name is Ron. I'm from Saginaw, Michigan.
Oh, Ron, thank you for calling in. You have a question.
All righty.
Robert. Hi, Bob. Ron Kabobo.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
How you doing, pal?
Well, pretty good. You call me Robert, though. You know I always go by the name Bob.
I know. Uh-huh. I know. What's the latest on the flag?
Well, we're trying to market it because I've set up a trust fund for my little niece and nephew and stuff like
right.
that. We've had
right.
a lot of interest from museums and people around the country. And I've had some from overseas, and I don't want to go overseas because it's a piece of American history that belongs here in this country. So hopefully I get something, because when I'm dead and gone, I can't do anything with it. But I want to help out my little great-niece and nephew because they have absolutely nothing.
Yeah. No, that's honorable. No question about that. But haven't seen or heard anything from you for quite some time, so... And I understand you were on the radio, so I'm going to call.
Well, I said, thank you. You'll know when you see me in town with my van, won't you?
Yes. Well, tell your host that I said hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Oh.
All right.
Good luck to you, Bob.
All right, thanks for calling.
All right, thank you, Ron.
Bye.
Good night. Oh, someone you knew. That is so neat, isn't
it? Yeah, someone I know. Yeah, you know, it's sort of funny because, I mean, I'm around town at the mall or something. I got to eat out in the restaurant. And people, and I speak to a lot of kids' schools, and so they'll say, hey, Mommy, there's a guy designed a flag. But it's sort of like you got to be 50 miles away from, I mean, I've been to all 50 states, 57 countries. But anyhow, it's sort of like... I'm known around town, but they just take me for granted. And that's the way I want it.
Well, now, do you speak, are you asked to speak in other countries as well?
Yeah, I've been to other countries. Matter of fact, I was in Hong Kong. I'm the past governor of Lions Clubs of Michigan, and I was in Hong Kong. Matter of fact, that's one of the neatest things I've ever done. This was in 2006, and I got the honor of carrying the American flag in the parade. And they have probably 30,000 people in the parade. There's probably 300,000 or 400,000 people in Hong Kong. Now, this is after it's under Chinese control, because we lost that in 1999.
Yeah, right.
It went from British. And anyhow, and I thought, here I am carrying the American flag, people cheering as I'm walking down in a communist country. And I had, probably 500 or 600 people come up and wanted autographs and stuff.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It just made me feel, because I never would expect that. I generally wear red, white, and blue shirts and stuff like that.
Right.
But I didn't even take any with me over there because I didn't want to get anybody upset or anything.
Right.
Like
yeah.
That.
Well, have you had occasion to go to Korea or Iraq?
I've been to Iraq and Kuwait. I was there with Norm Schwarzkopf.
Okay.
I have not been to Korea. I've been close to Korea, but I haven't been there. That's one of the country I'd like to go to, but I'm going to be in Sydney, Australia next year probably for the Lions International Convention.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Miles, stuff like that.
Well, it seems that you've had a very full, very colorful, and very rewarding life and career all the way around. You were a school principal, right?
No, I was a teacher.
Oh, just a teacher.
I had opportunities to go into administration, but... I enjoy the classroom.
Okay.
I don't want to be sitting behind the desk.
Yeah. Did you see any degradation, basically, in the attitude or the behavior of students in the 30 years that you were teaching?
I think probably respect. I think probably it's going downhill, if I'm honest opinion.
Okay.
Behavior and stuff. And the thing is, teachers had at their disposal then the discipline. Now, you know, a teacher's up talking or writing on the blackboard. Kids are now, I don't want to categorize everything. There are a lot of good schools.
Oh, yeah, right, absolutely right.
some of the ones I see there, I mean, they had never got away with that when I was a kid, I tell you.
You know, I was I used to donate my time many years ago when I was working, and to the project business segment of Junior Achievement, and that was Yeah, I did that for years.
Well,
and
I was the education manager of Junior Achievement in Saginaw County for about 5 years.
Oh, great!
That's one of the best programs there is.
Well, you know, I did quit because the schools they sent me to, I guess they thought I was very good or something interesting because I was very colorful when I got in front of the students. Well, the schools they sent me to, the students were so undisciplined. I'm using a very kind word, undisciplined. And I can spend 2 hours telling you stories about that, but hold on 1 second, please. Oh, yeah. My wife is just reminding me that we only have 3 more minutes to go, but I'll make this quick, that I eventually just quit. I just walked out of a classroom in the middle of a sentence. It was that bad.
Right.
And I thought I had a lot of patience with kids because I was an unruly kid myself and I understood it. And it got so bad that in the middle of the sentence, I just stopped speaking, turned around, didn't address the teacher at all, and walked out because I had several classes like that. And I said, I can't take this anymore. And that's a shame because it's their loss and my loss.
Well, as a teacher's responsibility, you know, you're a guest in there and you're not getting paid. And I still volunteer for third and fourth grade and Junior Achievement. But it's the teacher's responsibility to keep the class under control. You shouldn't be the bad guy, and I won't be the bad guy. I've done the same thing. I just walked out and said, hey, I won't come back anymore.
And that's what happened to me.
I don't like it then.
Yeah. Well, Bob, we're about out of time. We have about another minute. Is there anything that you would like to close with for our audience?
Well, let me just give if anybody would want to get a hold of me or something like that, I have some personal information. I have a laptop and I do a lot of traveling. The best place, the way to get a hold of me directly is through my email. It's at usflagbobf@yahoo.com or to Post Office Box 20404, Saginaw, Michigan, 48602. And I get a lot of mail and I answer it in a timely manner.
Okay. I didn't write that down, but if you can have someone send me an email with your mailing address and T-shirt size, I would love to send you an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt.
Oh, I tell you, I will wear that with pride, and I'll get some pictures and send some pictures back to you.
Oh, wonderful. Please do. Well,
you've been a delight to talk with, and you and your wife, and like I say, an hour went by real fast.
Yes.
When people see the flag in the future, they think, well, just it's a young man did something that put him in the history books. I'm nobody special. They generally say I did an extraordinary thing, but I'm just a plain person. And America is not a perfect country, but it's the best country God has given this earth. I feel that very strongly.
Okay, Bob, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. I sincerely appreciate it, and I enjoyed it very, very much.
And thank you, and God bless now.
Good night.
Okay, bye now.
Wow, that was interesting. Wow, that was fascinating. I knew it was going to be fascinating. That's why I had him on here. This is the end of today's broadcast, and we'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.